Hey everyone, my name is Will Malice, and I'm an assistant news editor for the Massachusetts Daily Collegian, the only student-run print and online newspaper here on the UMass campus, serving the community since 1890, and this is the official podcast for the news section of the Collegian called the Collegian News Hour. We're recording today's episode on Sunday, February 23rd, but this, like every installment of our podcast, will be released at 8 o'clock every Tuesday morning on SoundCloud and Apple Podcasts. So you're in the studio with me to recap the stories we have covered over the past week. Are the rest of the news team, if you want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Irina Kostakia, assistant news editor.
I'm Abby Charpentier, the news editor.
I'm Sophia Gardner, assistant news editor.
And I'm Catherine Eston, assistant news editor.
Cool. So for our first article we'll be talking about this week, there was the announcement for the Smith College commencement speaker. Catherine, you wrote about this. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so this was announced last week. Nancy Pelosi, who's the current Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, is going to deliver Smith College's 2020 commencement address. The college was, of course, very excited to announce this. They talked about her long and distinguished career in public service. Nancy Pelosi, of course, if you haven't heard of her, is a California Democrat, been in the House for a very long time. She's the highest-ranking elected woman in the United States government. And they talked a lot about important acts she'd been involved in, including the Affordable Care Act, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And she's going to be getting an honorary degree along with several other significant people. It includes some alums of the college, as well as local educators, including the principal of an elementary school in Northampton, who is going to be retiring this year. And I thought it was interesting that Pelosi last year delivered a commencement address in her home district in San Francisco, but the year before she was actually in the Pioneer Valley at Mount Holyoke. So I wonder, maybe she's getting 2 out of 5, eventually get to UMass in some other year.
Yeah, I think that's a really, like, cool commencement speaker to have, especially since he was such a critical part of the impeachment proceedings that happened recently, and yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see who UMass announces, because that's usually expected a bit later in the semester. I think in past years it's been late March, early April. So I was surprised to hear Smith announcing it this early. But I suppose once you've got somebody like that and it's confirmed they're coming, you want to let everyone know. Go shout it off the rooftops in Northampton.
Do you guys have any, like, predictions or even people you'd want to be the speaker for UMass?
I'm still waiting for Guy Fieri to finally come to UMass.
That would be great. I'd love an important person like Nancy Pelosi, who's, you know, very political, but at the same time, in an election year, I think I hear a lot from politicians, and I'd like to hear from someone like Guy Fieri or a comedian. They'd be fun, too.
Who says Guy Fieri isn't political?
Guy Fieri 2020, he's going to announce his campaign at UMass.
All right, cool. So for our next story, we're talking about another SGA meeting, which Sophia, you covered.
Yeah, so the main item on the agenda this week for the SGA was to endorse a letter to the UMass community put out by the RA/PM union. This letter was in response to the development of an anti-racism training for residential life staff. And this training was developed and implemented in January by a woman called Tita Fred King, who's a she's a doctoral student in education. And the university didn't end up paying her for developing this training, which is one of the things that the letter calls for, is that the university pay her for her work developing and implementing the training, and also that anti-racism training become a mandatory thing for all residential life staff. But the university didn't officially approve the training, so they emailed the RA/PM union on the same day that the training was supposed to be implemented, saying that they wanted to postpone the training, but because it was such late notice, the union implemented the training anyways. So that's where some of the controversy comes in.
So is the university saying because they didn't approve of the training that that's why they were not going to pay her?
There hasn't been, from what I understand from the representatives of the union that spoke to the SGA, they haven't had a ton of contact with the university since they requested that the training be postponed. So that's one of the things that I think the letter is meant to do, is kind of get the university to comment more on this issue and become more involved with the issue.
I think it's really interesting how the university isn't being super welcoming to this issue and to the training when we saw so many issues with race assistants in residence halls last year. So I wonder if they are going to try and cooperate more, because it is a real issue on campus and it should be addressed better. And I would hope to see that the university does take it more seriously and works with the RAPM union better.
And I know the SGA voted, I think last year or last semester, but I think it was last year, they voted to push for the university to make this training mandatory, because right now it's kind of recommended, but there's no actual rules in place saying that every RA / PM has to actually have this training. So I think that's definitely something that we should hope to see the university push for in the future.
So for our third story this week, this was an article about an event. It was written by Maria Elena Little Indara, and she wrote about a talk held at Amherst College. It was about vaping and some of the dangers of vaping. And this talk came from Christine Johnson, who is an assistant director of alcohol and other drug education and health promotion at Springfield College. So according to Johnson, vaping has become a part of a relatively new discussion on health and addiction. And Johnson said that some of the substances in Juul vapors include carcinogens, heavy metals, and ultrafine particles that can damage lung tissue. Some of the students that were interviewed after the event, there was kind of a mixed response. There was one student who felt there wasn't enough information about vaping to form an opinion. There was one student who kind of felt indifferent to the whole issue. And there was one student who felt there were misconceptions about vaping, such as how dab pens might be considered a type of vape, and also that people may not realize how bad vapes are or know how bad they are, but may not care. So yeah, what do you guys think of this?
I was interested to read that Johnston didn't really know much about this issue before being given the responsibility of giving a talk on it, because I think that is a big issue with the issue of vaping. A lot of people don't really know the implications of it, especially older people. So it's definitely really great that she was willing to learn about it and address that so that she could address it to the Amherst community.
And I think moving forwards, it is something that colleges and universities are both having to really deal with and look at. I remember last semester, or it might have been the semester before, we put out a story on when you look around campus and it says, you know, UMass is a no smoking, no, lists a bunch of things we're not allowed to do. No vaping was added to that sign. And it was interesting to go and interview grad students who said, you know, this wasn't around when they were in high school. And you know, figure they're only a few years older than we are. Most are in their mid to late 20s. And they talked about that's not something that they would have ever considered when they went into the public health field. That wasn't a reason people were going to the field at the time. But now it's a really very real issue that everyone who works in public health has to deal with. And, you know, students coming up are more likely to have tried vaping or tried something with nicotine that wasn't seen in previous generations.
I think one thing we talked about last semester, where we were covering all of the several states that were banning vaping and vaping products, I think we talked about how states, like, we were wondering if states would be looking into, you know, vaping products and seeing their dangers rather than maybe just banning them. And I wonder if that kind of research is, you know, actually being done so we can kind of learn more about them and you know, their negatives and or their positives or whatever.
Yeah, the vape ban's over in Massachusetts now, right? I feel like I haven't heard a lot about it since it ended back in December.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either, so. Right, cool, so that was our last news story for the week, but we do have another older issue to talk about. So we're talking about the February 27th, 1936 issue of the Massachusetts Collegian. And one of the things we all kind of noticed first was an article on the front page titled Modern Freshman Experience, Mild Hell Weeks, According to State College Professors. And it's basically just professors talking about how pledges for fraternities had easier hell weeks, which is basically where they would, like, an initiation process where students would basically be hazed. And yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Some of the stories from that article are really crazy. There's one where they talk about how they would send pledges on this really long intricate hike and give them a map, and it would end up just leading them to a graveyard. And then the upperclassmen would be hiding somewhere in the graveyard to make, like, scary noises and scare the pledges, which I think is really mean.
Yeah, I think there was one, too, where, like, they brought a student to, like, a random location, and they had to, like, find their way back, which is, like, a lot different back then, especially when they didn't have phones, or, like, certainly they didn't have cell phones or anything, and they just had to, you know, figure it out.
Later in the article, it brings up that one of the cases where they did do that, the person didn't show up within 24 hours, and everyone in the fraternity started getting very nervous because suddenly a student was missing, and it turned out that they'd gotten welcomed into a barn and just fallen asleep there and slept the whole day, so they hadn't shown up at the university, or at the college at the time. And I just think it's very funny, the nature of the article is basically, back in my day, hazing was better. And, like, if we were to redo this article, what, 70, 80 odd years later, I wonder if we could find alumni that would be willing to go on the record and point out that maybe hazing should be brought back. Right. Another one was, I think they went and they had to propose to a specific girl at Smith, and it would always be a friend of someone that was in the fraternity, so the girl probably knew it was coming. But I can't imagine them grabbing a freshman saying, okay, you have to go propose to someone right now, and we're going to hide and surprise you during the proposal.
There's also a story in that article where it says that they would send pledges off in the middle of the night, and they would have to walk to Northampton and come back with some menu from a restaurant. But the problem was that this would happen at like 2, they would get there at like 2 a.m. and none of the restaurants would be open. So they had to be really resourceful about finding somewhere to get a menu and then come back all the way to the university.
Another article that I thought was interesting for one small fact was Venezuela to be represented by state students because they were attending the Model League of Nations. And it hadn't occurred to me that Model UN wasn't a new concept, and that back when the League of Nations existed, they would create Model League of Nations. So I thought that was funny because when we learn about League of Nations in classes, it's just this very quick thing of, yeah, it was created after World War I, but it failed. After World War II, we get the United Nations instead. But thinking, you know, there are people that thought it was going to last a lot longer.
And then on the last page, there's almost like a full-page ad for cigarettes that says, it says Chesterfields, well, that's different. Their aroma is pleasing. They're milder. They taste better. They burn right. And they don't shed tobacco crumbs. They satisfy. It's a pretty interesting ad. All right, so I think that's all the time we have for now. It was great having everyone listen. Tune in next time. And once again, I'm Will Malice.
I'm Erika Kostake.
I'm Abby Charpentier.
I'm Sophia Gardner.
And I'm Catherine Esten.
And you've been listening to the Collegian News Hour. The music for this podcast was created by Joaquim Crude and promoted by Audio Library. Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and give us a rating if you enjoyed today's episode. It really helps us out. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.